I want to welcome David Blizzard. He is the Academic Computing Support Manager at University of New Hampshire. Today he's going to talk about the future of student computer labs. He maintains over 500 Macs, Windows, and Unix machines, or Linux. Also responsible for Mac setup as well as technical and consulting support for academic computing. David is originally from Rochester, New York. He has both a BA and a master's degree in zoology. And he studies or studied sea slugs. So how does that have anything to do with computer labs? We'll soon find out. I want to remind you all to please go ahead and give your evaluation for this when we're finished. Go to the EDUCAUSE site to do that. Thank you very much, and welcome, David.
Thanks. So I want to give a sort of an overview of what we are and aren't going to cover today. If you think I actually know what the future of computer labs is and you're here for me to just tell it to you, you might as well get up and leave now because I don't have all the answers. I'm actually hoping to get some answers out of this discussion. And I also want to have some back and forth here. So what I am going to talk about is what we've been doing, which is a specific initiative to look at the public student computing clusters, as we call them. So I may drift back and forth between computer lab, computer cluster. Means the same thing, big open room with lots of computers in it that anybody can go in and use. And we've been looking at those for a bunch of reasons, because the world has changed, as I'll talk about. And one very specific driver of that is that our building with our previously largest location on campus, well, that's our business school building, and that building is closing in a couple more months, finally, completely, because they built a new business school building, and guess what? That building does not have a big room of computers in it. My office is also in the business school building, and I don't know where I'm going to be in a couple months, so... Anyway, there are some certain things out there that made us say, we need to stop and take a look at what we're doing, and that's what I'm going to talk about. But I want to make this a little bit interactive. I want to get some feedback from the people who are in the room here as well as the people online. So I'm going to try out a new tool that I've seen been used before, but I've never used it myself, so we'll see how it goes. So you can grab your phone, you can grab your iPad, your laptop, whatever. We're going to ask some questions online here. So I'm going to go ahead. And this tool called Poll Everywhere pretty much lets you text message in or website in a message. So to get started here, you can basically text one of these codes. So for example, if you're at a school that's between 1,000 and 3,000 students, you can text the code 234805 to the phone number up top there, 3760, and your answers will appear up here. And we also can do it either by tweeting, or you can actually go online to their website, which is pollev.com, and you can just start typing in those codes there, and we'll sort of get a little profile here of everybody who's in the room and participating. And we're going to do some of these right now and then a couple more at the end to sort of follow along with some follow-up questions. So I can say that the University of New Hampshire, we are in that last category over there. Undergraduate population is 12,500 to 13,000 students, depending upon how you count it. If you count all the degree students, undergrads, grads, students who are non-degree students, we wind up in the 16,000 or so range. So you can kind of see we have a distribution here, mostly schools that are a little bit on the smaller side. The 1,000s and 3,000s are pulling away with the lead here. So I'm going to go ahead and stop this one for now. And go back to the next question. And right now, today, how many seats do you have that are public open computer seats on your campus? My group actually is managing right now around 750 to 800 computers on campus, but that includes classrooms that are not always in use or are not always available. It includes a lot of departmentally owned labs that we do the support for. We're actually running around 230, 240. I think, public computers, which, depending on your perspective, is maybe not enough given the size of our institution, or maybe it's too much. And that's one of the things we're trying to figure out. So you can see some ranges here. Surprisingly, a few number of people with very, very big installations up above 500, several in the 200 to 500 range. So, you know, we've got a whole lot of seats out there where there's computers sitting there for somebody to come in and sit down and use that computer. And I'll give another minute here. Any more responses? All right, that looks like it's stable. And then the last one here, how has it changed over the last couple years? Are you increasing seats? Are you decreasing seats? Have you pretty much remained the same? We've gone up a tiny bit. We've probably gone up from 220 to 230, 240, but not a huge change, honestly, over the last couple years for us. So right now, some people have scaled back a little bit. Fair number of people, most groups either decreased or stayed the same, some increasing. Nobody who is wanting to vote and say decrease greatly, whatever exactly you define that scale to mean there. So most people are kind of in a steady state, maybe going up a little bit, maybe going down a little bit. Down is certainly maybe a little more than up. So that kind of gives you a perspective of where people are right now. So thanks for this. Like I said, I've got some more of these. We'll try to run back to at the end as we have a discussion. So ancient history, that means 20 years ago in computer time. 20 years ago, I was an undergraduate student, or just finishing up being an undergraduate student. This is a very hastily drawn floor plan of my wing of my dorm I lived in. And I want to go through who had computers. Okay, the guy across the hall from me had a Mac Plus. The girl who lived next to him had a typewriter. In the double next to them, no computers. My friend down the hall had a Mac Classic 2. That was the bathroom. This is before days of iPads and being able to compute on the toilet. So no computers there, no computers in this room. The next room was the RA. The RA's got free telephones. So that was the cool technology they had. And I had the cool computer. I had the Amiga 500. All right, so you look at that, and you've got 3 out of 8 people who had a computer. We were the honors dorm. We were the academic nerds at that point in time. So putting this into the campus perspective, 20 years ago, not many people had computers. We wanted students to use this technology. It's a whole lot better to use a word processor than to type your paper. You know, even just that is a vast leap forward in learning and in revising and producing a better product. You know, let alone you might actually make a graph and put a graph into the middle of your lab report. So what did we do? We filled the need by having big rooms of computers. And in fact, we had this room, which is our historically largest location in our business school building. This room at one point in time was renovated to intentionally cram in as many computers as possible, and that was done because somebody found out that whether it was Keene State or Plymouth State, I can't remember which of the two, but the other two big schools within the university system, they had more computers than the university did. And that was bad. We can't possibly let Keene have more computers. So they had, you know, they had 150 computers, so by God, we had to get to 175. And that was the entire motivation, cram as many computers in as possible to let as many students sit down and use them. And I actually found some of our old reporting data looking back. So this is 95, 96 data. And people were coming in and using them, and this is what they were using. Mostly word processing. You know, Microsoft Works and ClarisWorks, you put those together, and we've got 41% of the usage. You throw in Microsoft Excel, and, you know, well over half the use. Works out what 58% of the use was some kind of office productivity application. Then we get Netscape Navigator, the only web browser in existence at that time, a whole 10% of the use. and then some other internet access tools. The reason why Fetch and Telnet were big is because that's how you got to things like your email, because you had to Telnet to the central system and read it that way. And then actually still a fair amount of variety, you know, 13% of other stuff out there. So all sorts of stuff all over the place, but by primarily productivity applications. That's where we came from. That's the traditional environment. We're providing them the tool that they don't have. We're providing them all sorts of things, and they go off and use it. So where are we today? We still have a big room of computers. It's the same room. It's more black and aluminum, a little less beige and blue transparency, but it's still a room of computers. We're still doing the same thing. But of course, the world hasn't stayed the same. Things have been changing. ECAR, EDUCAUSE, you're probably familiar with the ECAR survey they do every year, study of undergraduate students in information technology. Since 2004, they have been asking questions, and one of them is, what do you own for devices? And so here's their trend in desktop computer ownership, which goes down, which maybe is a little perplexing until you realize the other curve that's missing, which is the laptop use. And so the laptop use is gone up steadily, so far more students own laptops and desktops now. Lots more students have computers today. We're not talking 10, 15, 20% anymore. We're talking 70, 80, 90%. And we just surveyed some of our own students, and I'll talk more about this survey, but I want to share these numbers right now. UNH, 97% of the students have laptops. Desktops, 9%, or 19% rather. I actually did the quick cross tab. We had, out of 1,033 responses, we had 11 people who had neither a laptop or a desktop. And that was it. So 1% of the population. And yet, we still have a big room of computers, and it sits there, and people come in and use them. So there's been a lot of other changes in the meantime. I'm kind of preaching to the choir here, but you know, all sorts of stuff has happened in the meantime. We have all sorts of new technologies. Obviously, the laptop, but also tablets and smartphones. We asked the questions about that. I'll share in a minute as well about device ownership there. We've got network changes, and we now have almost always available networking, whether you're talking cellular data networks, we're talking Wi-Fi networks. Pretty much anytime, anywhere, you can get online, you can get to the internet. And then we have other kinds of disruptions, you know, new kinds of learning technologies, your portfolios, learning management systems, rich media, different expectations, different kinds of ways of doing things. And we have new applications as well, including things that are freely available. So web-based applications, things like Google Docs, Open Office. You know, that stuff's available and out there to the entire world to use. All sorts of things in the cloud, whatever that exactly means. And that's available either very, very inexpensively, if not out and out free. So given all this, we can't expect that those labs are being used the same way. And if we look and check, this is a two-week snapshot I did at the end of February of our computer lab use. The number one application is web browser. What are they doing? I have no idea. It's a web browser. Are they using Google Docs? Are they accessing the learning management system? Are they reading their email? Are they going on Facebook? I don't know. It's all a web browser. That's all I can see. That's what my reporting gives me. You know, we still have Word as the next biggest application at 26% there. You know, a little trickle for Excel, PowerPoint, SPSS, and MATLAB. But if you look at this, web browsers are free. Microsoft Office, at least in our campus, is the de facto standard. Everybody has a copy, pretty much. You know, it's kind of the normal thing that you go to the computer store to buy your computer. Like, you have to buy a copy of Office. They sell them. Almost everybody owns them. And if not, go get OpenOffice. It's free. It's just as good. And if not, go online and use Google Docs. You can do an awful lot of stuff that way. Everybody's got access to that tool. And those tools include the spreadsheet tool and the presentation tool and all those things. SPSS, we have a campus-wide license for 50 concurrent users. Anybody can put it on their own computer. MATLAB, same thing. 100 users simultaneous. Anybody can put it on their own computer. I'm not exactly sure what's in that remaining little 1% there, but pretty much 99% of our stuff could be done on their own computer. So why? Why do we still have computer labs? Well, we have computer labs because they're busy, right? They're busy. They're still in use. This is a breakdown of our computer utilization from two of our locations. Diamond Library is now our biggest and busiest location. It's our main library. And Kingsbury Hall is our engineering, math, computer science building. And the way to read this is that that yellow-orange color, 80% to 100%, that's when the computers were 80 to 100% of that, those computers in that location were in use. And so you can see about 25% of the time, we were at 80% or higher use of those computers in that space. And 60% or higher use was, you know, almost 70% of the use. This is a room that fills up by 9 in the morning and is busy all day long until, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 at night. We've got a homegrown login system. So when anybody logs into one of our computers, we record the time they logged in, the time they logged out. And then I have a wonderful developer on my staff who likes to write things to crunch all that information and spit things out. It's basically, if you're familiar with LabStats, we've kind of rewritten our own version of LabStats. We can get a lot of that same kind of reporting out of our own tool we've got. And then Kingsbury Hall as well gets full. Not quite as busy, not quite as often. If you actually look at more detailed resolution, you see some cycling up and down throughout the day. Students all rush in there. Students all go off to class. Students all rush in there. So not quite as much, but it's busy. On the other hand, though, when we looked, two of our rooms, not so much. And McConnell Hall here, which was our busiest location, historically was always full. Always had people waiting. During the busiest times of the year, we'd have a line of 10 people waiting for computers. And quite honestly, it was a little bit of a surprise to me that we weren't even getting to 60% of the use of the room anymore. And my office is over there, and I didn't see that because I was looking at it from the historic perspective, and I'm looking at it because I see the library all the time, and it's really busy. And also, my office used to be literally inside the room, so I'd walk through it all the time, and now my office is immediately adjacent to the room. And, you know, just things you kind of assume may not necessarily be the case. So that's one of the things we looked at them. So, yes, the computers are busy, but maybe that needs to be looked at a little more carefully and see if that's still valid. Students like them. We do satisfaction surveys. We used to do satisfaction surveys. We stopped doing them as frequently as we used to because we always got the same results back. Everybody liked our service. The only service they didn't like quite as much is the printing service, because the printing service we made them pay for. So we get the complaints that, why do you make me pay to print? So that's that large red bar on the bottom there. But basically, from the highest satisfaction to the lowest satisfaction, just 1, 2, 3, 4, give us your rating. And that's how things broke out. So people generally like having the computers. They like having the software. You ask them, they say they like it. If we had a $20 service where every Thursday afternoon from 2 to 5, you can come into the library and show your student ID and be given a $20 bill, they would like that service. They would probably tell us, you should have that service more often. They would probably complain that there's a long line waiting for that service. You should offer this service on Tuesdays or maybe Monday afternoons, because I have a Tuesday, Thursday afternoon class, right? Satisfaction with a service doesn't mean it's a wise investment. And so that's one of my arguments I've been trying to make, is saying, look, we need to look at what's really going on here and not just say this is a good thing because people like it. So yes, they do like it, but that's not the whole picture. Another good argument for having a public computer lab: it gives you a standard platform. I've had many faculty members over the years tell me, I'm so glad you guys are there, because I know that I can basically reject that argument of, I couldn't get to the software, I couldn't get to the thing, my printer crashed, I was out of ink, whatever the excuse might be, that's the computer ate my homework excuse, because the answer is, well, you could have gone to the public computer lab that had everything you need, and you could have done your work there. And that's true. And I think that's a really valid thing that we offer, that the faculty who are going to do a computer-based assignment, who are going to offer things, are going to require students to do stuff, have a place to go where they know they can get the work done. One little problem. We now have EUNH. These are online courses. The students don't come to campus. And if the student is in northern New Hampshire, they're a 2 or 3 or 4 hour drive from campus, let alone the students we've had who've been in North Dakota. They're not going to come and use our environment. So we've got a little problem there, and we're not quite sure how to solve that yet, although we've got some ideas we'll talk about. So this is certainly, I think, still a very valid thing that we're offering, but it isn't necessarily complete or sufficient anymore. It's not quite good enough. And why do we do this? Well, we offer computer labs because we always have. Well, that isn't necessarily the case. And some schools have taken the jump and made some big changes. I'm not surprised that most of you may have already heard of this, but University of Virginia announced in 2009 that they were going to phase out their computer labs over the next few years. What you may not know is they actually didn't get rid of all of them. They got rid of almost all of them. They do still have one room that's got around 20 or 30 computers in it, and it's for all the software that they can't provide in any other means, so all the really high-end stuff. And if you go online and look, you'll definitely find this, and you'll find all sorts of people pontificating and commenting on this when Virginia announced it, but there's really not been a lot since. You can't find a whole bunch of other schools that said, yep, we're going to shut ours down too. Some have, some haven't. But I don't think that because we've always had computer labs is a good reason to have computer labs next month, next year. If I project ahead 10 years into the future, thinking about technology and the changes and where things go, I can't see having a big room of computers in 10 years. I think things are going to be so different by then, it just won't make sense anymore. That doesn't mean we won't have something, but we won't have what we have today. And this is the quote that I wish I had when I went to my boss to basically propose this, and it's definitely going in my report at the end. I'm just going to sort of paraphrase this. From the ECAR survey last year on students, they said, asked the students about ownership and usage, and they said there's a difference between the usage, 56%, and ownership, 33% of desktop computers. So students don't own them, but they still use them. So therefore, they must be using public lab computers. But why are they using those when they've already got a laptop? Are they faster? Are they better? Do they have something they don't have? Are they getting access to free printing that way? Is it just that they're a nice, convenient place to go and do work? And investigating this matter locally is the best way to provide insight about the phenomenon. This type of investigation is imperative before changing policies or practices around reducing or increasing institution-provided and institution-supported computer stations. That's basically my whole argument right now, that we need to look at this. So that's what we've been doing. This is our little project. It's been myself, another member of my staff. I've had somebody from our business services financial group involved because we've been looking at the dollar amounts. I've had a couple other people from within our academic technology area, people that deal with front-end support, people that deal with the classrooms because we do the support for computer classrooms as well as the public labs. So let's say we didn't do public labs or public computing clusters anymore. Well, computer classrooms aren't necessarily going to go away, so how do things get impacted? So we've had a pretty broad group involved. We basically have said, well, what do we already have? What data do we have today? What can we answer with this data, but what can we not answer? What do we need to know? How do we get to this? Who do we need to involve in this process? What are these sort of secondary impacts? Like I said, if we said, no more public computer labs, well, we basically started with the public computer labs and then made everything else work like them. So if there is no them anymore, what does that mean for our classrooms or the departmental labs we run? This is what we've sort of got for data so far. You've sort of already seen the utilization numbers and the kind of application usage. We look specifically at session duration, how long people are on the computer. And that first big bar is under 10 minutes. And then 10 to 20, 20 to 30, and so on and so forth, to the last big bar is time over 60. And I said right up front, this is going to be a bimodal distribution. And sure enough, when my guy did the analysis, he says, yep, here's your bimodal distribution. We have people who come in, log in, check their email, leave. Come in, log in, print, leave. Come in, log in, do something, leave. You know, so that's very different usage than the person who's there for half an hour or an hour, presumably working on a project, writing a paper, doing research, or maybe just watching the latest, you know, episode of King of Thrones on Netflix or something because it's an hour long. I don't know. We also looked at our population we're serving. So 11,719 unique users logged into our machines. That number includes faculty. It would include staff who might have logged into our computers. But that's, if I actually have looked in the past, you know, that's maybe 500 of that number. But you put that number up against either our enrolled student or account base, there's a good chunk of the population that's not using our service. So that's kind of telling there. So we wanted to find out some of the whys behind this. This kind of, we can get this profile of what people are doing. We can measure that really accurately because we can tell when they start Microsoft Word and when they shut it off and when they log in and when they log out. And we can even look at what school or college they're associated with, which honestly doesn't tell you that much. It's interesting. It tells you the engineering students use the computers in the engineering building and that the liberal arts students don't. Big surprise. But what we did want to know is some of this other thing. So we basically focused in on, you know, the device ownership question, cluster use, how often, what their own reporting is on that. Tie that together with the device ownership and ask some questions around why. You know, if you had a laptop, why do you come and use our things? Or if you don't use our services, why not? Also some demographics information. And specifically wanted to talk about group work and get some information and feedback on that because that's something we've been trying to think about and promote. So here are some of the results. And this survey, I should say, we ran for the last three and a half, four weeks, promoted on campus. I'm thrilled that we had 1,033 responses to this thing. Where basically we just posted it and promoted it and got it out there and said, if you fill this out, you could win an iPad or a couple other giveaways. So three people are going to be happy and 1,030 are going to not win anything, but oh well, that's the way the world is sometimes. Device ownership numbers, kind of already talked about the desktop and laptop parts, but you can also see tablet ownership there. So a quarter of our students about have a tablet of some kind. And smartphone use, and that's jumped hugely from the last time we got any kind of numbers like this. We were more like 40, 50%, and now over 70% have a smartphone. How often they use the clusters? 9% never. I am so happy that I got 9% of people who never use our service to answer a survey about our service. Really, I'm really serious about that because that's who I want to really hear from. Why aren't you using what we're offering? Okay, you all set? Is there something else we don't do, something we don't do good enough? And you can see there's a smattering here kind of all over the place from I use the clusters a few times a semester, a few times a month, once a week, several times a week, or daily use. So, you know, 12% of people every single day, habitually, all the time. It's just part of the routine. You know, a lot of people in very frequently. So for those who have a laptop, how often do you bring your laptop and carry it on campus? 10%, never. 20%, only a few times a semester. You know, a bunch in the middle, and 22%. Often, and 16% every single day. So there's a lot of difference there, a lot of variation going on. Some people bring their laptop, some people don't. And group assignments, we had some other questions around group assignments and then group use of the clusters, and I haven't really delved into that yet to figure out what it's telling us. But at least this here says, well, group assignments happen, but they happen kind of infrequently. That's your, you know, once or twice a semester thing for most people. Some people, never at all. Very, very few people doing group work on a daily basis or weekly basis. So that's kind of an interesting thing to think about, that it may be as a service we need in certain ways, but it might not be as important or often as we want it. Somebody have a question? Yeah. Correlation between use of clusters and carrying of laptop. I haven't done that level of analysis yet to like look at our data. What we did do, we only asked why do you carry your laptop if you said you owned a laptop, but of course 97% said they did, so that pretty much got asked of everybody. No, I haven't done that cross tabulation yet to see how they're correlated, but that's one of the things we still need to do. We did, though, ask some questions. Why don't you carry your laptop? And that was asked of the people. I guess I'm going to have to run through all these again. It was asked of the people who were either never carrying their laptop or only carried it a few times a semester. So about 30% of the population. It was asked of everybody who owned a laptop. That's right. So a pretty big number. First answer is we're more convenient. That's the basics. We're convenient. We're already there. I don't have to carry my laptop. I need to print, and I can't. That's wrong. We actually have a service where anybody can set up their own machine to print. But obviously, we haven't done a good job promoting that. So that's something. But then we have my laptop's too big or too heavy. My laptop doesn't have what I need on it. I'm afraid it's going to get broken. And you can read down the rest from there. Kind of some of the same things that we thought we'd hear about why people don't bring their laptops. It's too big. I don't want to carry it. It's inconvenient. The printing was a big surprise, and that's certainly something we're going to target as we go forward. Next one. So for those of you who don't use the clusters, you either never use them or only use them maybe once or twice a semester, why not? Vast majority of people just said, my own computer is good enough. It does what I need it to do. So there's a lot of people where they're not using our service because they have what they need already. Otherwise, we're too busy. We definitely made a distinction between the public labs and departmental labs. So engineering has labs, journalism has labs, art has labs. All sorts of people have their own labs, so those are different, and so on and so forth. So we're getting some data there. When you come into the clusters, what do you do? I print. I access Blackboard. I check my email. So a range of stuff. Social media is still pretty high on the list, 33% of people saying they're coming in to check Facebook and the like. So a range of things there. This is the one, though, that blew me away. After we asked that question about what you did, we said, why were you in here? And this is a question where they had to rate their time based upon a set bunch of points up to 100. So assign how much of your time you spent doing X. So the categories were course-related work, some kind of work not related to a course, communication, email, Facebook, anything would fall into that kind of category. Or I was in watching Netflix or listening to music or just relaxing, playing games, whatever. 71 points on average for course-related work. So that one really has made me sort of stop and say, well, wait a minute. If we're providing a service and the use of the service is really for the teaching and the learning, that's pretty significant. And that was a big, big surprise. I was honestly expecting it to maybe say, about half the time I'm doing something for my class and about half the time I'm kind of screwing around and doing whatever. And that's the kind of common complaint we hear. Well, all the people in the labs and the library, it's always busy there, and I go in to do my paper, and I see all these students on Facebook, and that's the anecdotal complaint we get. And yet, at least in terms of what they self-report, the data is very different. And so this is trying to get beyond that 54% web browser, because if they're in the web browser, maybe they are really doing research. They're accessing Blackboard. They're, collaborating with somebody. They're whatever. But they're doing it. They say they're doing it for a course, at least a lot of the time. Next steps of this, analysis and more analysis. We've got a lot of numbers here to look at. We actually got 200 written responses that we need to go through and categorize and figure out what they're telling us in addition to the data, looking at the group questions we asked, starting to do some of these correlations like, well, if you bring your laptop, do you use the clusters? Or if you don't own a laptop, do you all those kinds of things. So we've got a lot more number crunching to do. We just closed the survey down last Friday. And so this is really very raw. We wanted to do the survey in the fall, but we just missed our window to get it out in front of people before they all left for the semester. And so we had to wait until we were a couple weeks into this semester and do it then. Couple other things we still have to do to wrap up this project. Stakeholder discussions. We have a lot of people on campus, non-traditional student office, disability services, we have a veterans affairs office, student senate, academic advising, all these kinds of people that we basically want to get together in a room and talk to them and say, so pretty much I want to get them in a room and I want to scare them. I pretty much want to bring them in a room and say, so we're phasing out all the computing clusters and a year from now there won't be any. How does this change your world? And that's really not our plan yet, but I kind of want to get them thinking that way. It's like, what if this wasn't here anymore? What would it mean? Does it mean suddenly we're not ADA compliant? My disability office people are saying, well, we're right now relying on you guys to provide accessibility solutions, and so if you're not here, we're in big trouble. Or our non-traditional students office telling me, well, our non-trad students say, they really rely on you guys because they have to do their work only when they're here on campus and they can't work from home. So I don't know. I want to hear what their input is. So that's one thing we're definitely going to grab. And we actually have a bunch of students who, as they filled out the survey, we said, we want to do some follow-up focus groups. Are you willing? And we had like 200 people actually give us their names and email addresses, which blew me away. So we're definitely going to follow up with them and bring them in and feed them pizza and throw things up against the wall and see what sticks with those groups. So what does the future look like? What are the possibilities? Some of these are things we're doing, some of the things we might do, some of the things maybe you're going to do, and I'm going to run through these pretty quickly so we have some time for discussion. One way I think the future could happen is specialized labs. This is our Parker Media Lab. It's for audio and video work and other kinds of rich media work. We tried to do this originally in with a regular student computing cluster. We'd have some stations with this equipment. It just didn't work very well. We had to put it off in its own space, give it its dedicated staffing, dedicated resources, a lot more training for the student staff who work there. And you can see it's really busy at certain times of the year. And I think other schools are looking at this as well. Beyond a media lab, we have certain kinds of things like AutoCAD for civil engineering. We're never going to put AutoCAD on student machines. We're just not going there. Licensing-wise and other reasons, support-wise, it's just not going to happen. There's things like ProEngineer, MultiSim, other real high-end pieces of software. And this is basically going back to what originally a computer lab was for. We were providing what they didn't have. They don't have access to AutoCAD. They don't have access to, a digitizing tape deck. So they can bring in stuff off of VHS and whatever. They don't have the expertise to use something like Final Cut. So we're providing a service that's really valuable. So I think there's a lot to say for more specialized spaces, and that's definitely one thing we're going to try to keep in mind. Kiosks, this isn't the best picture in the world, but it's the one I could find really quickly when I needed one. This is one we tried. This is sort of the ultimate minimalist kiosk. The computer's just sort of strapped to the wall on a pole. I would not recommend this solution. Personally, we don't have these up anymore. But basically, the sort of quick access, the 10-minute or less session. The advantage of these, or computers on a table in a hallway, they're cheap. You put the computer there, you lock it down well enough. I don't have to staff it. I don't have to provide any infrastructure. I'm not paying space costs. We have some space costs involved where if I have a 1,000-square-foot room, I pay for that room in a certain way. I don't have to pay for sticking something on a wall in a hallway. So there's some advantages there. Disadvantages, well, it's two or three computers in a hallway, and so the monitoring and maintenance of it is a little trickier that way. Group spaces are things we've already done. We kind of added some group spaces into our lab. Maybe it's just something simple like this with a table with seating to have more people at it, a bigger display. Our new business school building, as I said, does not have any public computer labs in it. What we have instead are 28 breakout rooms. And each of these breakout rooms is laid out like you see here. About 20 of these have a computer that's installed that's a Windows computer that you can actually sit down and use. These rooms are available for people to just walk in and use, or we're going to try to set up a reservation system. They also might be used for classes where actually a professor might be having class across the hall, and he's like, okay, you know, I've talked to you about this, and for the next half hour, go across the hall, find a room, split up into groups, do something, come on back in here. It's a different kind of space, a different kind of use. Yeah? They're actual four-wall rooms, a glass wall that faces the hallway because we didn't want to make little tiny cubicles that nobody could see into, and God knows what's going on in there. You know, we've got hookups in there to bring your own laptop if you want to do that. Try to promote that, make it easier. We've done that some in our library. We have some spaces where we have a computer at the station and a hookup for a laptop. I rarely ever see anybody hooking up their own laptop. Somebody sits down and uses the computer that's already there. So one of the things I also think we might try out is just put a monitor on some tables. No computer. But bring your laptop, and hey, you can have a big display, and you know, things like that. We're also trying in a few of these breakout rooms a piece of collaboration software called TeamSpot. The company is Tidebreak, if you want to look that up. It basically allows you to bring in your own laptop. You put a little client on it. It's a very simple install. And then I can take things from my screen and put them up onto the shared screen. The other person in the room can take their pointer, move it off the top of their screen up onto the shared screen. They can work on my document. We can collaborate. We can share stuff without needing cabling. You don't need to have, you know, the sort of the steel case tables that have all the cables there and everybody has to plug in and you switch between them. This basically does the same kind of thing, but it's all through software and network. VDI is another good thing that we're looking at. Some schools are further ahead than we are. We're just starting to pilot a virtual desktop. But I think this has a huge implication for our online courses. We can provide that guaranteed environment online with all the tools that people need. This is actually me connecting to our virtual desktop pilot instance from sitting out in the hallway here in Providence. And it was just as responsive as if I was on campus. It works really well. And maybe to some extent, we still have more rooms of computers. Maybe to some extent, there's still a need out there. We still have some population that does not have any computer. It's pretty tiny, but I don't necessarily want to leave them with no option. And there may be ways to sort of phase that down a little bit, change things up. Our library has some requirements that we're, I always get the term wrong, government, it's not repository, depository library. So we have to provide certain public access to certain kinds of information, which is on computers. So there's a bunch of factors in there to weigh. So there might still be places for this. So, questions. Which ones do I want to throw here? Let's just try this. Flip over and try this one here. Nope, I don't want to create a poll. By the way, I can very quickly create a question here. So if anybody has their own question that you want to get everybody in here to ask, just ask me a question with the question, and we'll throw it out there for everybody. So let's just start with a really big one. You know, 10 years from now, will we still have rooms of public computers on college campuses? What do you think? And as people are texting in their answers to this, feel free to ask me any other questions you'd like about what we're doing or your own thoughts and share other things as we go here. We've got about 5 more minutes left. All right, 50-50 so far. Okay, we're up to 15 responses. A lot of people still saying yes. Okay, so the group think at the moment is we'll still have them. Some people I can see shaking their head no. Some people I say yeah. Why do you say this? What do you think? What if we still have them, are they still just a big room of computers, or do you think they're different? And if they're different, how are they different?
I think they're going to be more configurable.
Okay, so more configurable. Okay, so I want to repeat that for the people who are online, and actually if you want to come up to the microphone, that'd be great too. So talking about more flexible options, tables you can move around, LCD displays you can plug into, things of that sort. So a service, but it's not the same row and row of computer that we have today. Other thoughts?
David, kudos on the presentation. I really enjoyed the data that you generated and the overall view of computing labs at an institution. For me, the pervasive cell has always been discipline-specific software,
yeah.
Specialized applications. You mentioned AutoCAD.
Right.
And I think that becomes even more meaningful in a bring-your-own-device world, because if you have students on Macintoshes who are learning computer science and require Visual Studio, there's a fundamental disconnect there. So what I was curious is how you saw virtual desktop moving forward is offering that stable, singular computing environment to all comers.
I'm really hopeful. We're just doing a pilot that really only got off the ground this spring. It's taken longer than we wanted it to. And we're doing a very small pilot right now where we actually have a fleet of loaner laptops in our library, and those were a pain in the neck to support. We actually ran them as we did a full public computer lab setup on them, but that meant you had to plug them into Ethernet, and the students didn't like that because they had to go find the working Ethernet ports in the library, which was basically a lovely hunt and peck game because they weren't necessarily all labeled or labeled right. And they were old and they were slow. They weren't on all the time, so when the computer did get turned on, they had to do a whole bunch of updates and patches. It's just not a great solution. So basically we said, let's take these old laptops and reuse them as dumb clients to talk to virtual desktop. So we're doing that right now. It's been a great way to get our feet wet with the technology and learn about it. And I'm going to put in shameless plugs 1 and 2 here. There are a couple of SIGs coming up. The virtual desktop SIG, I am coordinating. So that's May 20th in Lowell. And so if you want to know about virtual desktops and what other people are doing, UConn is going to be there, Quinnipiac is going to be there. They are both far ahead of where we are and can really share some good stories. We want to talk about real-world implications here. And then another session coming up in June, every college has a computer lab, is more around this discussion of what's next. What are the other possibilities out there? And by the way, this presentation I will post to the NeurComp site so you can get this information and my contact details as well. But I'm really hopeful, and we've been looking at different kinds of thin client, remote desktop, Citrix, whatever solutions for like 10 plus years. And they've always been kind of, sort of, yeah, I could see it maybe working in some cases. VDI works. I mean, it's good. It performs. It's decent. Do I think it's going to do AutoCAD yet? Maybe not. But I think a lot of things that otherwise I would say wouldn't be good, it can do, with no questions whatsoever. Yeah, another question.
At our university, we actually went to a model where we dual booted all our computers. So we got rid of just a PC lab and just a Mac lab. And so now all of our labs are Macs, and we dual booted the systems.
Yep, our hands-on classrooms are mostly that way now.
So how would you deal with that in a situation where you'd have to virtualize it, since virtualizing OS X is currently illegal with licensing?
Yeah, it's not illegal. You can virtualize OS X if you're doing it on Apple hardware, which leads to some interesting conundrums. And technically, you can run VMware stuff on a Mac server kind of. I don't know. That's certainly the problem is right now you can provide a Windows desktop environment. My best answer is 54% of the use is web browser. 25% beyond that is Office. What we're seeing people use is predominantly stuff that's available on either platform. And, you know, I think if you're living in a web browser world, you can make do in certain cases. In other cases, though, I don't think it holds up. So I think that's a need there. I can't think of any software we have today, though, that is a Mac-only solution outside of the media area, outside of that digital app. You're not going to ever, okay, I won't say ever, you're not going to, in the next 10 years, edit video in a VDI environment. You know, that's just not going to really work very well. But other things I think can. Okay, so viruses are more prevalent on Windows. Fear of Windows. Windows is bad. Yeah, Windows 8 is weird. I'll say that, but I don't know if I said it's bad. We're sticking with Windows 7, at least for right now. But I would say that, at least within the VDI environment, you've got such tight control that I've got no fears of malware. I mean, we've got total tight control. And if somebody downloads something onto their personal virtual machine that they're using, you throw it away and spin up a new one, which takes about 10 seconds. You know, so it's a toaster at that point. It doesn't work, throw it out, bring up a new one. It's a virtual toaster at that. It's really simple. So I think some of those concerns go away. But, yeah, I would really like Apple to change their licensing practices, basically. I mean, it's technically possible. It's really just legalese at this point. Any other quick questions? We're going to do one more, and then I think we're about out of time. Yeah?
Yeah, so do you talk that if there was any buy-in needed from administration or finance or anything like that? Because I know people are really happy to keep renewing machines because we know how to do that. People really have to keep to throw the labs away because that'll save money, but in between is...
Yeah. I part of the reason we're doing this is to try to build the case to make the change and make the change in such a way that we can say, we're taking the money we used to spend on X and now repurposing it for Y. We are definitely downsizing some because we have this lab closing and the building closing and so on and so forth. And I basically, because we're all on this, you know, I got to think of like last October, what I'm doing a year and a half from now problem. But basically, when I did my budgeting, I said, look, we know we're making changes. I basically managed to say, look, I'm going to take a chunk of money that I used to spend on setting up this lab, on student staffing, on so on and so forth, $25,000. It's sitting there in my budget as new student computing initiative. I don't know what I'm doing with it yet. But at least I was able to put it forward and make the argument that we need to make some changes and take some funds that we used to spend on X and now have them available to do something new. And hopefully by this summer we'll have a good idea of what we're doing with that and go from there. So I think that's a strategy at least you can try. Great. Thank you very much, everybody.